Women's Health Matters on Talk About. Brought to you in association with the Scotia Clinic Rathas Tralee, specialists in fertility and menopause.
And a warm welcome to Dr. Mary McCaffrey from the Scotia Clinic, who joins us in studio. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you, Deirdre.
Now, I know you're going to talk to us a little bit more about the perimenopause in a while, because it's World Perimenopausal Awareness Month. It's always something Awareness Month, isn't it?
I know. And I suppose they are opportunities I always associate September with PCOS awareness, but I think it's worth mentioning perimenopause in passing because a lot of people don't quite understand it and understand what that means. And a lot of women in perimenopause actually have almost gone out the other end before they realised that's why I felt so bad for so many years.
Well, I know you want to talk about fertility as well, but will we start with perimenopause?
We can start now. We've started, so we'll keep going, I suppose.
I know that, you know, because you do what you do for a living, you always knew about the term perimenopause.
But yeah.
Am I right in saying it wasn't a thing until relatively recently?
Yeah, it wasn't a thing. There was an expression that was used regularly, I'd say probably maybe 2-3 years ago. And I suppose what it means is menopause is the word, your menopause last period. Peri is a Greek word which means around. So it's the years around and leading into the menopause. So what that would mean for us as gynecologists is that women would maybe sometime in their 40s or even earlier in their 30s start to have some menopause symptoms, but they wouldn't be in full-blown menopause. They'd still have periods. Their periods might become a little bit more erratic, more irregular. They might have maybe some menopause symptoms, like anxiety would actually be one of the biggest ones. We'd see mood and anxiety more in perimenopausal women, and it'll often manifest maybe in the run into their period. And then maybe not be so bad in other weeks. And that's just because your estrogen levels naturally are probably lower in those weeks anyway. So women will often go through the symptoms, but the exhaustion and the anxiety, and the, because of the age they are and their kids are in school and college and elderly parents' work is busy, they'll often put it down to lifestyle. And sometimes it's only when they actually, for whatever reason, get addressed and get on HRT and they go, oh my God, that was what was wrong with me all along.
I'm not going mad.
So I think it's just to be there and to look at the awareness, and maybe if people think, gosh, could that be me? And it won't be everybody. And I often get women who come in and think it's perimenopause, and then you sit down, you go through their symptoms and you actually do a burnout score or something and say, no, you are actually not perimenopausal. You may be, but your burnout is your bigger issue. So it's all about that bigger conversation.
Now, why might anxiety be caused by something medical? I mean, is it the drop in hormone levels?
It's a lot of the drop in hormones. And you'll often find that the women who get it quite severely maybe had premenstrual anxiety in the past, maybe postnatal depression, that they may have had, just this exacerbates at this time for them. But undoubtedly, it would be the one symptom that we would see over and over. Even simple things like people maybe get anxious about driving when they never had a problem with driving before. They might have maybe sing in a choir and they don't feel they can do that. It's almost like a confidence thing goes as well.
Mm-hmm. And what's the solution then? Like sticking specifically with anxiety during perimenopause.
So if someone had absolutely no other symptoms, we would probably look at maybe not going straight to HRT. That might not be the right solution for them. We might look at, you know, some form of talk therapy. It might be cognitive behavioral therapy to help them to deal with the symptoms. Could be EMDR, which is another type of therapy. And it sometimes just the awareness alone of knowing what it is. Magnesium glycinate's very good for anxiety. Different strategies. But so we would look at a whole load of different things. But for a lot of the women, they will say when they start on HRT, it does make a difference.
And
it's the risk benefit. You've got to look at, you know, do you really need medical treatment? You know, it's
or
just
could it be
benefit.
Tackled in another way?
Yeah.
And typically, at what age do you start perimenopause?
Usually early 40s, but you might find that some women would, even in their late 30s, might start to manifest with some symptoms. And at that age, sometimes the pill, they may be all. But what actually, sorry, I was just going to say what can happen. Someone might be on the pill for a long number of years and they decide to change for that method of contraception. And when the estrogen that they've been on in the pill has been masking maybe some menopausal symptoms, then they go maybe put in a marina or their husband has a vasectomy, and then all of a sudden they realise there's something else going on. So yeah, it's a difficult one, but there is a lot of very good information out there. It's worth looking into if people are wondering, could this be me?
Okay, so it would be worth somebody, if there's any woman listening and she's in that age cohort, not feeling the best, maybe having some of the symptoms you describe, might be no harm for her to get her GP to maybe refer her to the Scotia Clinic.
Or the GP themselves might be happy to do it. And they could even start tracking their symptoms. Even okay. just going online and finding there's a lot of really good trackers. I'll put one up now today specifically for this on our social media. But even sometimes people tracking their symptoms helps them to kind of tease out what is going on. So that can be useful. Yeah, and they can talk to their GP or they can talk to us. Lots of avenues for them.
And apart from anxiety, what are the more common...
Like any other menopause symptoms, it might be, you know, the flushes and sweats, it might be exhaustion, the brain fog would be another one as well. And it's always really difficult to tease this out in someone in their 40s because their lives are so busy anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm interested in what you say about the burnout scale. I'd say there's a lot of women burnt out there.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's really interesting to see that, especially in my own profession and nurses, healthcare professionals, a lot of burnout there.
Yeah, people juggling too much in their lives. So how long does the perimenopause go on for?
Could be up to 10 years. So it could start at 40 and then keep on going until someone's last period comes. And you'll only really know you're menopausal when you've had 12 months without a period. And I suppose the other important thing as well is in perimenopause, people need contraception. It's not just because you're in perimenopause doesn't mean you can't get pregnant. People do.
Yeah, exactly. So that's something that people need to keep in mind. And if anyone has a question for Mary about the perimenopause, do get in touch with us. Anything else you want to say about that before we move on?
Not particularly, no.
Okay, very good. You also want to discuss fertility with us this month.
Yeah, I think we haven't talked about fertility for a long time, and I suppose the government free IVF scheme has been around now for, I suppose it's almost a year, so I thought fertility in general was worth looking at. The issues we would see in our practice and as gynaecologists is that sometimes people wait too long to do anything about it, and that was one of the core messages I wanted to get out today, that one in six people struggle to get pregnant in general.
That seems very high, is it? As high
it is,
as
and it's probably getting higher. And the problem is that a lot of people aren't even aware of the fact that that this is an issue until they start trying, which is often going to be in their mid-30s. And we know that women are born with the number of eggs they have for all of their lives, and over a period of time, the number of eggs goes down. And even though men will produce new sperm all the time, as they get older, we now know that the quality of the sperm may not be the same in a 50-year-old as it is in a 20-plus-year-old. And you'd expect, one would expect someone in their 20s who's having unprotected sex to about 30% will get pregnant in any one month of unprotected sex. And that most people, say 50% of people should get pregnant in the first year of trying in their early 20s. It goes down gradually over time, but it does really drop after 35. And when people come into us in their late 30s, they might have been trying for 4 or 5 years and they haven't really thought about that's a long time to not be getting pregnant in your 30s if you're having protected sex, and earlier to look at why rather than later. And sometimes I meet people and we've been trying for 7 years and you think, gosh,
why didn't you come into me 7 years ago?
Yeah, and the problem is then you're kind of, you know, you're swimming against the tide then when you're in your late 30s. So I just wanted to highlight that, and that's an important fact. And the fact that when people are, and we know that people will be going for their free IVF or their free fertility treatment, and it's a fantastic scheme, but there's going to be a 6 month lead-in period when you send in a letter for an appointment, and our people will be going to Cork because Cork is the hub for the Southwest. So there will be a lead-in time, and in that lead-in time there are things people can be doing. They can be getting healthier. They can be on their folic acid. I'm really shocked at the number of women I meet now who are not on folic acid when trying for a baby. Anyone who's potentially can get pregnant should be on folic acid that you can get over the counter. So the planning ahead could be, you know, cutting back cigarettes, vaping, getting your weight down if you're overweight, if you have a medical condition, it might be high blood pressure, get it under control in the lead-in time to that. And for example, one of the exclusion criterias for the free IVF is high BMI. Can't remember off the top of my head now. I think it might be BMI of, it's quite as restrictive. I think it might be 30 or 35. So there are things people could be doing while they're waiting, and making sure that you're immune to rubella, because we know now with the amount of measles around that people are not maybe having had their MMR vaccine or it's wearing off. So I think they're important things to be doing in the lead in to trying for a baby. And then looking at treatment options. There's nothing to stop people getting their tests done, making sure their ovarian reserve is fine, making sure the sperm count is fine. And even if they're not going to try for another couple of years, at least they know
where
they stand. And if someone had endometriosis and they've had a lot of surgery on their ovaries, maybe sooner rather than later for them might be the option.
Yeah.
So they were kind of messages I wanted to get out.
Egg freezing as well, you want to talk about that?
We are seeing more women looking at egg freezing as an option. And that basically means women who maybe are not in a relationship, or they might have endometriosis but aren't planning a baby for a while because they don't have a partner or whatever, that you can do an IVF cycle and freeze the eggs to use in the future. Now, obviously, that's in the private sector. Probably costs about 3,000 to freeze your eggs, but they're there for the future. They're young, they're healthy eggs.
Where are they actually stored?
They're stored in egg banks, like sperm are stored in. So they're in big freezers of liquid nitrogen. And the great thing about that is that the eggs are the age they were when they were frozen. The freeze techniques are very good now. So, if you freeze eggs, you have a good chance if you get a good number of eggs. Say if you froze 15 eggs, you have a good chance that at least 10 would survive a thaw to be used in the future for IVF if you wanted to use it. So we see more women who maybe just aren't in a relationship, don't see where their future is, looking at that as an option.
I'm always fascinated. I know you said it at the outset that women are born with the number of eggs they're going to have for the rest of their lives from the minute they're born.
Yeah.
And is it just the luck of the draw that some women are born with loads of eggs and more aren't?
I think it's not so much that, but I do think that we lose the number of eggs over time differently. So, for example, it might be a genetics thing, but I think environment is a huge factor now. And all these, what we call endocrine disruptors that are in plastics and the vapes, I'm sure the vapes are terrible. And in our environment, what we breathe, the air we breathe, the food we eat, all of the additives, all of the endocrine disruptors will potentially and can potentially lead to more eggs being lost over a period of time. We'd know, for example, cigarette smokers, their egg reserve will diminish over time faster than a non-smoker.
Yeah.
Simple things.
So I know, like when you're young, you think you're going to live forever, you're going to have no problem getting pregnant and all of these things. But really the message is to, even if you haven't a notion of having a baby for a long time yet, there's lots of things you could be doing to make sure.
To be thinking about it. Yeah.
Okay, we'll take a break. We have some questions for Mary, but we could certainly fit in a few more. So if you have anything in the realm of women's health that you'd like to ask Dr. Mary McCaffrey, text or WhatsApp 083 300 3300, or you can phone Siobhan on 066 712 3666.
Women's Health Matters on Talkabout, brought to you in association with the Scotia Clinic Rathas Tralee, specialists in fertility and menopause.
We're talking women's health with Dr. Mary McCaffrey from the Scotia Clinic. And Mary, this question is in from a Tralee listener. She's 62. She went into menopause at 45 due to thyroid problems. In the last week, 6 weeks, she's got three Bartholin cysts. They're quite sore and painful. At the moment, she says she is clear. Until now, I'd never heard of them. What causes them?
There's a Bartholin's gland, which is at the opening of the vagina, very much at the very beginning of the vagina. And if it gets infected, it can cause an abscess rather than a cyst. You usually see abscesses, and that's why it's sore, it's an abscess. So for whatever reason, sometimes they get a little clogged up, or there can be a bug there that just grows because someone's run down or whatever, and that's what causes them. So three is a lot in quick succession. I'm presuming she's probably been to a GP or wherever and got treated for that. but if they were recurrent, that would be worth maybe looking at why.
Okay.
And surgery sometimes is an option down the line if they keep coming back.
Now, I'm not sure if this is really the kind of question you can answer, but we'll try it anyway. It's a lady from Listowel who's in her 70s, and she just says the skin all over her body is dry and itchy, and she's wondering, would taking a supplement help?
Okay, well, I suppose as we get older, all of our skin does get drier and itchier. I would think, yeah, that it would be worth looking at, is she getting enough nutrients in her food? She probably is. That age group tend to eat very healthily. But it could be worth popping into the pharmacy and getting a supplement, maybe with some nice fish oils or something in it, and looking at vitamin Bs and things for skin. Yeah, that would be worthwhile.
Okay. A listener says, I was told I was going through early menopause in my 30s. I'm 57 now. Would I be over the menopause at this stage? I find I'm sweating a lot during the day and sometimes at night.
Well, I suppose the first thing to say is that when someone says they went through early menopause in their 30s, that would mean they would have had to have stopped their periods then. And it doesn't sound, I might be wrong, but that's not the message I've got out of that. She might have been perimenopausal, we've just talked about that, and now maybe in her early 50s she's full-blown menopause. So that's the sweats and flushes could be menopause now, full-blown menopause. It could also be thyroid problems, so that's another thing that has to be borne in mind. But I suppose the most common thing in 50-year-old women is menopause, and if it's bothering her, then she should go to her doctor and see what can be done for it.
Yeah, and she's 57, so it wouldn't be too late for her to go on.
Well, there
HRT.
Are lots. It wouldn't. There's other options besides HRT, and I suppose that's another message that everyone doesn't necessarily need HRT. There are newer medications on the market that aren't hormone based that can be useful in an older person, or there are lots and lots of other drugs. But it's also important to make sure her thyroid isn't somehow playing up. So it is important to see a doctor if it's bothering.
Now, this next lady is 52. She had breast cancer in 2022, followed by a hysterectomy in 2023. She says, I was put on menopause through chemotherapy. Now I'm struggling with hot flashes and joint pain. So I presume she can't go on HRT, can she?
I wouldn't presume it. Yeah. I suppose we'd be way more cautious about HRT for someone like that. But we would always link in with their oncologist and their breast surgeon to see what kind of tumour it was and what hormone it's receptive to. But there are lots of other drugs. We'll always use vaginal oestrogen. This has came up in its bucketfuls at a meeting in Listowel recently about can women with breast cancer take vaginal oestrogen for vaginal dryness, and they can. And most oncology people have no issues with that. But we would maybe look at her other individual symptoms and see could we use a different drug, like maybe oxybutynin, gabapentin, different things. So it's just finding something that will work for her.
Okay. A caller says, or a texter rather, says, my hair is shedding a lot and has been during perimenopause. Is there anything I can do about that? Is that another symptom of perimenopause?
Can be, and it's again about the hormone imbalances and testosterone levels and everything. So the first thing we would always do is just check out to make sure that she's not anemic. Anemia can be associated with hair loss, excessive male hormone testosterone can be, thyroid dysfunction can be as well. So again, it's getting a doctor to just do a review and see, figure it out. Because if someone is having significant hair loss and they don't deal with it in time, you will also often get to a point where you miss the boat with treating it. And
yeah,
that's important.
And does your hair kind of thin out as you get older as well? Sometimes,
yeah.
I'm waiting for that to happen to
me.
No, it
won't happen to you, I can tell you.
I have a massive, big, thick head of hair. I'd love if it thinned out a small bit. A listener says, at what age does one come off HRT and are there withdrawal symptoms?
Well, there are some people, every person is different. Obviously, after a couple of years, we review all our patients every year. So everyone gets a yearly review. At 5 years, we'd be looking at where the symptoms are. Could they cope with maybe dropping down a dose and bringing the dose down? And it's about the risk balances as well, risks of breast cancer and other problems. And for some people, they may stay on it at a very low dose for a very long period of time because they really need it, for maybe for sleep, maybe for their bones, maybe cardiovascular risk. And there are women who are on it very, very indefinitely, I can tell you.
Yeah, and doing well on it as well.
And doing well on it. It's about just making sure you keep on top of it and make sure there's a doctor looking after you.
Yeah, exactly, and keeping an eye on things. Mary, before we let you go, you've a new venture that you want to tell us about.
Oh, yeah. I'm joining forces with UPMC in Mallow, just so people would hear that I'm doing a clinic in Mallow. It's separate from Scotia. I'll still be in Kerry, so people don't need to be worried about that. So the clinic in Mallow is going to be run by the UPMC group. UPMC own the Santry Sports Clinic and they own a lot of the radiotherapy units around the country. So we're setting up Women's Health in Mallow and it'll be a very similar model to what we do in Kerry, what I do in Kerry already. It'll be a combination of GP referrals, self-referrals and the same level of services will be provided there, and on-site we will have all our radiology, DEXA scans, whatever. My nurse is going to be Killarney based. I better not say it at the moment until she tells everyone else she's going to be with me as well. So it'll be Kerry sort of invading into Mallow once a week to provide women's healthcare.
Yeah, but anyone who is a patient of yours already needn't worry. It doesn't mean you're closing down in Tralee.
Not closing down in Tralee, no.
Or anything else.
People who are kind of closer to Mallow might say, oh, this suits me better now.
I'm just going to sneak this question in. It just came in from a male caller who wonders, at what age does a woman stop getting pregnant? That's kind of a vague question because it's a very hard one to...
Yeah, what we say is that people who are in the perimenopausal or menopausal phase, you can't be sure you won't get pregnant until you've had at least got to the 52 and a year beyond. So that's why we always advise people to use contraception right up to a year after the menopause. Yeah. Very, very important.
Yeah, because it does happen. I mean, it doesn't happen too frequently, but you do hear people in
there.
Oh,
you do. I mean, we would say at 55, if someone has a coil in at 55, look, we can take that out because you're not likely to get pregnant now. But people do need to be really careful around that 50-ish, 52 age group.
Yeah, okay, very good. Mary, people can find you at the Scotia Clinic anyway, and anything else you want to mention?
Not at all, no. Yeah. And from the end of the month, we'll be in Mallow and the referral pathway will be through the primary care centre in Mallow.
And you were also, just to mention again, you were saying you had a great response to that talk you gave in Listowel.
Yeah, we had. I want to thank the Garden Centre for putting it on. It was really, really good. The other thing, people who are really supportive of women's health in the county are the Kerry County Library Service. Niamh is the librarian executive, I think was her official title, and we're doing a talk at the end of, I think it's sometime in October, people check with the library in Carrigrohane. So we're doing a talk in Carrigrohane, and we know that Carrigrohane has quite a strong Ukrainian population and they're always looking for information on women's health in Ireland, and that will be well supported and translation services if necessary, so to be aware that talk's coming up.
Super. There's always something happening, which is great. Mary, thank you so much, and thank you for answering all those questions for our listeners. And it'll be October when we talk to you again. Mm. And we look forward to that. We'll take a break, folks.